this a little closer. Good morning, everyone. Still morning time. Welcome to our session. This is upgrading event crowd safety for today's world. We appreciate you being here with all of us and making time out of your schedule. I know we know that you have a lot of stuff you could be doing right now, and there's a lot of stuff going on, so we appreciate your time spending with us this next hour to talk about a very important topic. So we're going to dive into the what, why, and how of keeping people safe at all times during large events, be it a football match, a festival, a visit to a theme park. In today's world, there's a myriad of challenges impacting events, from climate change to a rise in gun violence. Of course, last year, we saw the tragedy that happened at Astroworld. And for going on 3 years now, we've been in a pandemic, and that's had an impact on and brought a whole slew of unique safety protocols. So to that end, we're going to be discussing the current challenges, preventative measures, and how to be prepared for the future. We're going to try to keep 10 minutes at the end for Q&A, but if we run out of time, we'll all be available after the session. So we're going to start off with, I'm going to introduce myself, and then the rest of the panels will introduce themselves. My name is Kim Owens. I'm the COO of Buddy. It's an event tech company that optimizes crowd safety, empowering the fan. My background is also in Wi-Fi and internet connection for large-scale events, and I've been in the event industry for at least going on 10 years now.
Hi, I'm Claire. I'm CEO, founder of Buddy. I work with Kim. I'm also director and, of culture and safety for Electronic Music Alliance and co-chair for ESTA, which is a non-profit organization creating safety standards that we roll out in the event industry.
Morning. My name's Gopi. I'm the president and founder of Cusp Agency. We offer digital services and experiential production, largely music festivals, outdoor events. And my past has been producing music festivals like Coachella and Stagecoach and beyond in a digital strategy role.
Hello, everybody. My name is Christian Lau, CTO for the Los Angeles Football Club and Bank of California Stadium in Los Angeles. Happy to be here.
Great. Thanks, everyone. So I'm going to start with Gopi and Christian. What's involved in creating a safety plan, Christian, for your stadium and Gopi for the large-scale events like Coachella that you were involved in? We'll start with you, Gopi.
Sure. As a festival producer, in creating a safety plan, I mean, largely those are requirements by the local authority, and municipality or county has their own sort of patchwork of guidance and framework in your permitting process. So, you know, typically the issues they want addressed or signed off on through, you know, a combination of local fire, police, building code and safety would be your combination of your emergency operations plan, your security plan, your traffic management plan. These days, they want a COVID and health and safety plan. It's a pile of documentation that generally gets assembled. Actually, I'm producing an event in a few weeks here, and I counted 60 pages so far of documentation in my permitting process related to those items. In my role at the agency, when we consult with festivals on in the digital capacities, ultimately, the key to what we're trying to influence in a large-scale event and festival is how the technology we implement at shows can enable communication or change the operational capacity to make a safer real-time environment for the event operation. Mr. Christian?
That's a good one, Gopi. Thank you. So for Bank of California Stadium, whether it's, you know, Los Angeles Football Club playing, or we do a Live Nation event, or some other concert or music festival, from my lens, my focus is to eliminate the friction as much as possible for the guest. So we rely heavily on technology that gives us an advantage around, you know, covert threat detection, for example, getting people into the venue as quickly as possible with digital initiatives, There's things that we're working on now around biometrics, for face identity, for ticketing, for age verification and payment, those types of things, all opt-in, of course, but eliminating those friction points, but also having a very reasonable technology stack on the backside where we are protecting our guests, but without being intrusive, right? So we're wanting to eliminate all the optics of long lines and, you know, brutal security apparatus type situation where you're having to basically, you know, pull your belt off and deal with taking your backpack off and all of these things that we're trying to eliminate.
So, Gopi, you mentioned a 60-page safety plan. And so does that go, you know, what are your thoughts on responsibility of safety when it comes to the actual promoter? And Claire, I'd like you to jump in on this as well. So, Gopi.
Yeah, I think when you're going through an event permitting process where most of the health and safety requirements are requirements to execute your event, I think it's become too commonplace that's a checklist of things that you have to accomplish before you're given your event permit. And unfortunately, I think an industry has sprung around where you offload a lot of that responsibility to third-party vendors like your security companies and your medical companies. And to be honest, awful practice of people regurgitating, you know, from event to event, those sort of operational plans. I think the part that's missing in a large part from a producer or promoter's perspective is that it's more than a requirement, you know, it's more than a document. And once you accomplish those feats, you have to implement them with communication and staffing and resources. And it needs to be a constant dialogue through the duration of your event, through the finalization and even the postmortems, you know, with your agencies that are involved. So, you know, some of the faults I've seen in recent tragedies, you get world-class vendors supporting the festival, you get incredible documentation, but where's the implementation, you know? And I think if the agencies, and what I mean by like local agencies involved are not talking together, or you're not creating opportunities for them to talk together or understand their respective, you know, operational roles, or that you as a festival producer, you're not resourcing for someone to manage communications more than your social media manager, or that you're not enabling the dialogue that it takes, or investing in technologies beyond the bare minimum requirements from the local authorities to create a safe environment. I think that's what we've lost some sight on, you know, in the business and industry, that this is more than a requirement for a permit. It needs to be a genuine investment on the promoter's part to implement and educate their staff on these operational plans. You know, unfortunate to say, but I think a lot of these plans are developed and they're not even circulated amongst the operational staff that have the visceral touch points with the fans, and that needs to change.
I agree. I don't think I can add anything to that. It really is about communications, and not just, you know, the promoter and what they're doing, you know, looking at how the patron can play a part in being accountable for their safety. And also, if the promoter implements safety protocols, how do they relay that to the patron? Like, for example, if there's an exit and they're not displaying where the exit or saying you need to use this exit at a certain time, it's useless. So it really is about communication with the patrons, and not just also just relying. I mean, obviously, the promoters have liability and they have to meet, like Gopi said, certain criterias. But, you know, everybody plays a role in making an event safe. And just like Gopi says, it's like communication. I think one of the things that's different to where I'm from in the UK and Europe, as opposed to the US, is that we have a lot more red tape There's a lot more regulations. Like, we use the word qualify for certain roles, but where I'm from, it's certifications. There's a lot more assessment and criteria. Like, you need to learn. Like, there's one thing giving training, which we do pre and post, pre-event, but how do we assess that it's that someone actually has absorbed that information and they know what they're doing? I feel that needs to be taken up a notch, and we need to definitely look at how we certify and assess people.
Yeah, I think to add to that point, a promoter or producer in North America, their investment in health and safety and technologies related to that is largely guided by their risk management and their liability as an organization. And it's not guided by a regulatory framework. If there is, that is done on a very local level. And so when you're guided by risk management and liability for your health and safety protocols, that is a very opaque a way to manage things. You know, big event properties obviously have a lot at risk, so they make their investments. But we know events come in all shapes and sizes, and they all need to be safe environments for everybody. So, you know, there's a lot of great dialogue going around now with the, you know, recent awareness on these topics of, you know, making those recommendations and on a federal and state level, and we hope they get implemented. It's guidance that's not just needed for the promoters; it's needed for the local authorities as well. You know, when I travel from market to market, you know, some markets like a New York or a LA, a place that has a big event industry, they have specific departments and they have experience and talent. But then you go into other markets and they sorely lack some of that, you know, operational capacity. I think we need to lift all tides here and, you know, hope for better.
It is a community effort.
Yeah.
It's the continuity is really needed, you know, and we've, you know, here in the States, we have the UK as a model to potentially adopt here. We're a big country. We obviously have a lot of division from state to state on a lot of different policies. But when it comes to keeping people safe and reducing harm, hopefully we as an industry can really push together to lift all boats and make more people safe. Christian, you had mentioned the implementation of, you know, biometrics and some of the technology that you've deployed at Banc of California Stadium. What are some of the processes that you go about in terms of adopting technology that can, you know, make it more enjoyable for the fan and you know, in terms of how you do your research and what you decide to deploy in the whole process? Because it's time, it's staff, it's money. So how do you kind of incorporate that into your operations and get over some of the challenges?
Great question. So going back to 2017, and keep in mind LAFC, we started as an MLS club in 2018. We kicked our first ball right in 2018. We opened our venue in April of 2018. Going back to early 2017, there were a lot of things that we wanted to do in the venue that had not been done before. We were really hyper-focused on the guest experience. Our leadership and our ownership group comes from entertainment, right? And so we knew all of the challenges that we're hearing about today for, you know, festivals and other sporting events, et cetera. And so we decided to lean into our customers, right? Which we don't really call them customers. They're really our audience, our guests, our clients, you know, those types of things. But we decided to do design sessions back in 2017. We brought in a couple hundred of our season ticket members that had come on board prior to kick and asked them what their challenges were with other sporting events, which was really helpful because they explained to us what they liked, what they didn't like at, you know, what was then Staples Center, for example, or Dodger Stadium, and, you know, concerts, Coachella, for example. And so we took that guidance and we did the exact opposite of what a lot of venues and events do. And that was really helpful to us. And so with that, the technology component was just kind of the natural effect of it, right? We didn't implement technology for the sake of the technology, but understanding where we needed to be as an organization and, you know, providing that guest experience, the technology just kind of aligned for us. So digital tickets, right? We basically ripped off the Band-Aid. There was a lot of headwind around digital ticketing, and people thought that PDF was the way to go, you know, these crazy notions, because we did that.
And by that, exclusively mobile ticket. No other option. Yeah.
You got no options. We got a lot of flack. People thought it was not going to be a good experience, et cetera. Anyway, so we did it. It worked. No complaints. Everybody's happy. And so we're also focused on that now. So we've got, you know, I mentioned to you guys earlier, covert threat detection. So our plan is to, and this is all unfolding now, so I think by next year, 2023, we should have this fully implemented, but super excited to have the idea where you would have a digital ticket, right? So, you know, NFC, and you would just tap your phone. We do that today. And then we're also working on facial recognition ticketing, which sounds spooky, and I know a lot of people get triggered by that, but ultimately it's an opt-in. We're not forcing anybody to do that. But what they learn is, if you have covert threat detection, which means we're going to use a system that can identify, you know, different types of metal, porous metals, organic materials, so explosives, et cetera, you do away with magnetometers, right? So you're not going through a metal detector anymore. You're not having to drop your phone and your keys into a tray. So all that communal touching disappears. Super excited about that. You're literally walking into the venue with your digital ticket or your face, like you would a retail store. And so that's where we want to get. And then, you know, along the lines of the customer journey, when you think about going to a retail store in the stadium, if you want to buy merchandise, if you want to buy, you know, beer or hot dogs or chicken tenders, which are really popular for us, the idea that you can, you know, check out today, we use Apple Pay. It's like 80% of all of our transactions, so it's been really well received. But we want to move to the face for that as well, because you can literally walk up and we identify you because you're on our, you know, so we use Clear as our partner for identity, which is free to join, you know, in our venue. And so what's cool about that is you literally walk up, we've identified who you are, you can buy beer with your face, and we don't need to check your ID. And so that's something that we've been working on for ever and a day. It took the state of California 2.5 years to give us the approval to do it. And we launched it earlier this year for System of a Down, heavy metal band based out of Glendale. The Armenians, they rock. And so we launched it. You could buy beer and canned cocktails in an IoT retail unit. And so that's been really, you know, well received. And so we just want to work through these types of innovations, and it really just comes down to the guest experience. We just want to eliminate friction so people have a great time and we get away from what has been the standard in the past.
You know, the mobile, the cell phone has obviously become, you know, we're all glued to it. We look at it thousands of times a day. We're using it now, you know, as you said, for mobile ticketing and buying food while we're there and all of these things. But it still comes down to communication, right? So you're a large festival, and you're on your cell, and you're using cellular technology, and the towers around the festival, if you've got 100,000 people, or even last night at Empire Control Room, trying to text him, where are you?
I was watching T-Pain.
We were waiting for T-Pain to come on.
And I lost my cell phone reception.
For T-Pain. So, it comes down to the basic texting and calling, and sometimes it doesn't work. A lot of times it doesn't work if you're a large festival. And, you know, if anyone saw the videos of Astroworld, you know, people were trying to call 911 for help. So, you know, with your background in event safety and the, you know, the decades in the events industry, Claire, can you speak on that issue a little bit?
Yes, I can. So I'm going to take it back to the idea behind Buddy. So I'm originally from the electronic dance music industry. And 20 years ago, we weren't glued to our cell phones. So I actually lost a friend through venue negligence. We couldn't find him. He was lost, and we couldn't contact him. But now, today, people are glued to their phones. This phone becomes something that the fans can empower themselves to use for safety. As we know, most of us have probably been to not just festivals, but where there's large crowds, and it can really affect our cellular service. So really what Buddy does is that it allows you to see and chat to your friends and navigate your area when there's no cellular or Wi-Fi. We think that's a really important thing to feature when you're in large crowds because, like I said before, it's not on just the promoter to keep people safe. So it's just not practical, especially when we're talking about, you know, 150,000 people. You know, we're talking about budgets and how much security can be, and limited budgets, right, too. It really does need to take the patron, and we want to be responsible. We want to have accountability for our safety, too. You know, it's we need to have those tools. So, you know, like Gopi mentioned, even in a small event last night, we had lack of cell service, and we can't underestimate what dangers that implies if you do lose communication.
And I think also with the mobile technologies and phones, like something like Buddy's doing with the mesh technology and communications, like, take advantage of the collective capacity that everyone has in the audience. These devices are incredibly powerful. They speak to each other in real time. Us as event producers can orchestrate and speak to communications to our audiences. And I think there's an incredible amount of communal sort of capacity where we can empower ourselves to create safer environments. And I think Kim, you're speaking on connectivity. I think this comes back to, again, something that is not in regulatory framework by any means. Investments in your cellular capacity, your wireless capacity. There's some wonderful things coming out like satellite internet that'll give you 400 megs down, where we can actually deploy in the middle of farms and fields a cellular network. That's on the horizon, like things like Starlink. And, you know, when we talk about a promoter's responsibility in enabling, you know, communications and platforms, you know, one thing that struck me at LAFC when I first started visiting the stadium, like, the network that you guys designed there was like a knockout. I had never seen anything perform like that, which is how we originally got in touch. I was like, man, if these guys invested in such an incredible networking at this, you know, modern facility, you know, what can we do with that capacity? You know, it's a platform that then enables your mobile ticketing, then enables, you know, our tactics like MixHalo, our streaming audio, or a technology like Buddy. I think, you know, too often when promoters and producers are serviced a technology by a promoter, they really look at a real simple use case in which they can utilize that technology. But some of these technologies are platforms that could influence every aspect of your event. So things that I've done at Coachella over the years, I led digital strategy there and the mobile app, and you know, we implemented geolocation tools. We have a real-time overview heat map of our audience where we can see them spread out over the field. We integrate that operationally into our closed camera systems. We have an operational command constantly paying attention to that in real time. We've redeployed medical resources based on that data. We've found cell phone thieves with backpacks full of phones because of the data coming from concentrated points. And yes, that's a great health and safety tool, but I use that same geolocation data to go back to my bookers and tell them what bands were most engaged or not. I use that same geo data and platform to go back to my sponsors and tell them whether the sponsor activation was engaged. We use the same real-time mobile messaging capacity to enable our sponsorship messaging through the festival and event. So although you can look at a platform technology like, maybe we'll provide Wi-Fi to our fans, or maybe this will make a safer event, there's a lot of juice you can squeeze out of these things, you know?
What would you say, though, to events that don't have large budgets like Coachella or the bank that can't afford all these fancy tech?
Take the next step, you know, wherever you are now. Take the next step, whether they're requiring you to do it or not. And we had this conversation last night because me and Christian were arguing over the new Envision system. It's a new sort of optical scanning instead of a magnetometer in the past where, you know, scan for guns and, you know, ballistics. You know, there's a new AI technology emerging in this space where, you know, they're using camera systems to use AI detection and to pull you apart for a search and scan. I know a lot of these things are not in health and safety frameworks. Ask yourself, are you doing a pat down on your event right now to see what's
which
in people's pockets? Yeah, which
costs
some staffing.
I mean, staff,
yeah,
of course.
Ask yourself that. Okay, if the answer is we're not doing pat downs, well, you probably should start implementing that first.
Yeah.
And if you're doing a pat down today, maybe you need to implement a magnetometer the next time. And once you get, and that's just a simple, you know, metal detector in layman's terms. And if you're at the mag, then you might want to explore things like an Envision system to, you know, keep taking the next step in safety. The bare minimums are not appropriate anymore. And they're in, an industry focused on the bare minimum requirements is gonna lose the faith of our consumers.
I think my point as well is that budget shouldn't be an issue.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's always something you can do.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the you said implementation was a huge part of it. So, you know, we've seen the issue with crowd surges and the ramifications of that. Having all those tools in place, but the actual implementation based on the analytics, the data, the heat mapping, and everything else is obviously key, right?
Yeah, I mean, data is only as good as it's interpreted and analyzed and communicated amongst the team, you know? There's wealth of data sets that you can get at a typical event from your ticket scans, your entries and exits, right, to your point of sale data, to mobile data. But if you're not collating this data, finding the sort of value and interpreting that and educating your team institutionally mm-hmm. for your next go at it, what good is any of it?
Right.
You know? And that's a workflow. That's an investment in time and energy. But the capacity is there to create a safer environment.
Christian, speaking of data, and maybe Claire, you can jump on this as well. What about real-time data? Like, you know, the way that you know the different security systems that you have at your stadium, and being able to identify an issue, send security out there to address it. You know, how are you going about kind of utilizing the combination of policies and your technology to give you real-time data into what's going on, not only during a football match, but, you know, during a concert?
Sure. So real-time data, obviously key for our operation. We use it for everything from getting into the building, right? So security, ticketing. We use it at retail for merchandise. We use it at food and beverage, you know, for concessions. We know who's coming into the building through their Ticketmaster account. We have people that we flag specifically. If we want to meet and greet certain people, we might have, you know, VIPs coming into the building that night. So we have that as well. One of the major topics that we're focused on over the next couple of years is crowd intelligence platforms and building that out. And so what that means is, you know, we've got, you know, multiple sensor interpretation around camera systems, beacons. There's some things that we're doing over the network with a couple of partners that I hope will make it to market, you know, in the next 5 years. But it's cool to have that, but then also layer on machine learning and artificial intelligence. There's some things that we have in the cooker right now. So we're trying to develop with some partners around an AI stack that lives, you know, above and beyond what you would see today in a venue. And it's tied to the camera system, so we have really good predict, and this will sound a little bit crazy, but predictive threat interpretation is something in the future that we are hyper-focused on, and that's the ability to know intent, right? So we would know as something is unfolding, an event. So somebody wants to throw a punch or there's some situation that our system would pick up on, right? So then we can have our security officers, the LAPD or the California Highway Patrol, because we kind of have everybody just based on our location. We're in LA, but we're actually in Exposition Park, which is a state park. So we have multiple agencies that manage the security in our venue. It's probably one of the safest venues on the planet because of it. But, you know, using artificial intelligence to understand the threat detection, but then also looking at, you know, like Gopi and Claire said, so heat maps, understanding where crowds are at, where they're going, their dwell times, how long it's taking them to get through a concession line or to the restroom, et cetera.
Congestion. Yeah,
always key. Congestion's always an issue. We want to eliminate it. But then also understanding when you are in a retail environment, when you're walking up to one of our autonomous retail units, right? The AI can see you and it knows if you're happy or sad or delighted or confused, which sounds kind of crazy, but that data doesn't go anywhere. But we just need to understand, you know, do we have the right merchandise mix, right? Do people want Jose Cuervo canned margaritas or would they rather have, you know, White Claw, whatever it is?
No one's drinking Jose Cuervo around here, man. Come on.
So, thanks. But yeah, so anyway, we're looking at AI and machine learning, not only for security, but just across the customer journey.
In real time data, I think to bring it down even a few notes in terms of taking those next steps, ask yourself, does all your emergency operational staff that has an essential safety component, are they all on radio? Is that a digital radio with channels? Do you have a dispatcher? Do you have real-time communications, maybe more than a social manager or a hybrid social manager that is expressing operational incidents to the fans in real time? It could be as simple as a high wind event or an electrical storm or a rainstorm. But do you have those people in place? Is there an awareness on your team to even communicate that out? The next step, incident tracking. You know, it could be a glorious spreadsheet or it could be some software. You know, there's a few vendor providers out there. But do you understand where the trash cans are overflowing? Where there's security breaches? Is someone documenting that in real time? Can you do an assessment of that at the end of your operational day to prepare for the next day? Those are simple steps in sort of real-time implementation and technology. And get to the next step is, you know, what I'm always advocating. And there is a wealth of incredible tools once you create that foundational environment for networking and communications and staffing resources for health and safety at your event.
I agree. I think it's not, you can get lost. I've seen, I'm not going to mention any names, I've seen partners just get lost in data, but they don't have a response plan, which it ultimately means nothing. So especially when you're talking real time, I think that's really important to have the response planned, you know, really tied up. It's data's just as important as your reaction to the emergency.
So we, you know, for those of us that were planning to come to South By in 2020 and a week before in March, we heard that it was shut down. All of us in the events industry were obviously impacted, and the whole industry was impacted significantly. So, you know, if you're looking at all the industries in general, COVID really, you know, kind of like set a spark for the great resignation across all different verticals. And so, you know, we've seen, you know, a big return back to festivals. We're here at South By. Gopi and Christian, can you speak on, you know, how you've been bringing back events, how you've been bringing back, you know, even your staffing and things like that, and kind of like what the challenges that you're dealing with right now?
Yeah, Gopi's looking at me, so I'll take that one real quick. You know, we got 3 matches into the LAFC season in 2020, and then we had to shut down and then we were basically just shut down for a year. We played the rest of our season, but it was without fans, which was really awkward to be at because it was just very quiet and just the energy sucked. And then we got into 2021. State of California finally let us, you know, reopen the venue. We started with 10% capacity, but you had to be, you know, verified as a, you know, vaccine verification or testing, which is very cumbersome. It worked. People showed up. I think they just wanted to get out of the house. But then magically everything reopened, you know, right around the recall. I don't know if anybody in here is from California, but there was a recall effort. And then as soon as the polls didn't look great, the state opened up. It was magic. And so we had full capacity last year. Our no-show rate, unfortunately, was a little bit high, you know, anywhere from 15 to 20%. But when we started talking to the other teams in Los Angeles, they were all seeing the exact same thing. So there was some hesitancy for sure. And now we've reopened, you know, our season just started late February. And like I said, we did System of a Down. And by the way, we did a ton of concerts last year, too. So we had Rufus Du Sol in our building for 3 nights in November. You know, those were all sold out shows. 25,000 people a night, totally crazy. And a bunch of other stuff. And so people showed up to those concerts in mass. Like, it was just a different audience. So we were really happy with the result. And now that we've started up this year, you know, our no-show rate is a little bit better. And then, you know, System of a Down was totally packed for 2 nights. So that was great. So we're feeling like things are starting to wane a little bit. I think the COVID hesitancy has definitely cleared up quite a bit. And now in California, you don't have to wear a mask in our venue anymore. You don't have to show proof of vaccination or COVID test anymore. So that's gone away, and now we're starting to see an uptick in people showing up. So I think we're in a good spot. From a employee standpoint, in 2021, we were only about 75 to 77% of the staff we needed on concessions, right? So that in itself was a real challenge for us. And we had to not open certain concession stands, and wait times were a lot longer. We brought in mobile ordering, and we just had a lot of challenges operationally. This year, happy to report that we're actually around 90 to 95% of our staffing requirement for concessions, because that's our biggest event day staffing need, is about 800 people for concessions. And then if you're down the street at SoFi, where the Rams play, you know, current Super Bowl champs, they need about 3,000 people to operate their concessions. And they, you know, obviously had some struggles at the beginning of the season, but by the end of the last season, they were also in good shape. So things are definitely on the uptick.
And to echo some of that, you know, Christian's in a fixed venue. I largely operate festivals, so these are like temporary outdoor pop-up events. I bring it up because of operational frequency. And we talk about current environment of health and safety at our events. And to be frank, it is a very difficult environment for staffing and vendors. You know, we've had 2 to 3 years off. Everyone fell off this magical carousel of events and festivals and things. Some people had not returned to the industry. Those who are still in the industry are overtaxed and overburdened, to be frank. And this creates risks, you know, to your events. So staffing is a critical component, as Christian mentioned. And so, to be frank, I'm seeing 30% increase in my security costs across the board you know, we're playing double time, essentially, to have adequate staffing at our events. Where in the past I could bid out multiple vendors, I'm struggling to source single vendors sometimes. And I bring this up because people just need to be aware and prepared. This is not an easy environment right now to create safe events. It's going to take more from us, from a resourcing perspective, from advanced planning, or thinking of technologies and strategies that might be able to supplement some of the staffing, whether it's an Envision system that might cut out some of your staffing at the gates, or adequate communication. I think everyone should be very conscientious about, you know, fatigue and sourcing right now, and it's something that you should anticipate well in advance to your event if you don't have one already in queue. Because it's certainly a challenge that needs to be met, and hopefully that'll all ease up once we get a few good cycles back in here.
And Gopi, what's your thoughts on making sure people are qualified for certain roles? You know, because we are desperate for staff,
yeah.
And we saw at that festival, at that tragedy, there were, you know, because of that problem, they were forced to hire people that weren't necessarily experienced in roles they should be. How do you think we should overcome that?
Yeah, you know, again, I think we have to rethink sourcing, you know, too. When you develop your scoping for your security or medical vendors, or you develop or you're hiring on staffing that hopefully has some experience in the field, make sure that you're building in the requirements for them to be in meetings, operational meetings, in person or virtual, that people are not just showing up to work because they're executing a vendor scope, you know? Hold your vendors more accountable for the advance. Hold your staffing more accountable for communication in advance, and make sure you're resourcing them to educate their staff and enable them to create opportunities where they are training a lot of the young new folks that are coming into the event industry on, you know, tried and true experience and strategy. And looking ahead, us as event producers, we need to document our workflows better, to be honest, so that we can continue educating new generations of professionals in this industry. I think, you know, for too long we've thought that we could fix everything with gaff tape and zip ties, to be honest, and like that's not going to cut it anymore. And we need to treat our business like any other industry does, and we need to document workflows, and we need to train and educate young professionals in this business.
Well, speaking of training and education, Claire, it would be great for you to explain how it's done in the UK and some of the different, I think you've actually been in charge of training in terms of safety, security, and protocols.
Yeah, I can talk to what the work I do at ESTA. So when we're creating standards, we look at all the barriers to entry. So I mentioned before, finance might be one of them. Not all of us have, you know, big budgets that we can apply to technology or have large security. So, and also experience or skill sets. So when we're writing these standards, we have to, you know, we have to look at all the things that people need in order to have a safe event. One thing, and I don't want to sound like, because I'm British, we do things the best way there. And
y'all been partying for a while.
I live in LA. I'm just coming from a how do we make things better. So what we do in the UK, regulations are enforceable. So here, you know, it's not enforceable. And should it be? So it's kind of, we have less deaths in the UK, apart from what happened at the stadium at Liverpool. I don't know if everyone's aware of that. That caused change immediately. After Astroworld, nothing's been done. You know, it's caused emotion, which is good, and emotion can sometimes evoke change. Has anything been talked about with policy change on a federal level, which it should be? I believe it should. No, it hasn't. And when is that going to be looked at? I think, you know, us as an industry, we're always, you know, and I don't want to sound like, oh, poor us. Like, when COVID hit, we were the first ones to shut down, and we weren't really supported. So trying to get that message across and trying to call, it's like, who's going to get behind that? So at the moment, what we do in the US, we're creating standards that are not enforceable, but we recommend. You know, how are we going to get those standards to people for them to adopt is another question. So, but yeah.
Claire, I agree. You know, there is a lack of federal oversight and regulation, and I think that's very American in some respects. But like, There are a few things out there, actually, that I think every event producer and critical staff should be aware of. A combination of NIMS and FEMA have the ICS, Incident Command System. This is a national framework of how every emergency agency in the country, from first responders and beyond, it's the framework of how they operate and communicate in a mass casualty incident or any mass incident resulting from health and safety. So I implore producers to take their staff through ICS training. There's plentiful resources online for this. There's even free education for this online. You can get a certification for it. For the sole reason of when something goes down, how are you interfacing with emergency operations? Do you have a staff that even knows to interface with them in the right ways, to the right roles? It's large times emergency operations and authorities like, and that's part of incident command, they take command of the situation. But that does not mean that a promoter producer doesn't have many tools at their disposal to support this incident and from a communications perspective. So ICS, take a look at that, incident command. And then also simple stuff, CPR, first aid. Is your staff aware of those things? That could be really critical in saving someone's life, even on a micro level. So even those few things, despite not being regulatory frameworks, are interoperable standards and education you can implore in your operation.
But I think it's kind of, you've got to encourage those people to get certified, right?
Yes.
If the promoters are not paying, which is why would they invest in that? You're like, get certified and then come to me.
Yeah, because that's a challenge right now, right?
Yeah, and I'll say ICS education is plentiful and free out there. You have to resource, time for your staffing to get educated in it. And but why? I mean, look, us in the live events industry, we got a lot of personal responsibility to take on here. There is a problem. I'm tired of telling people I'm in the events industry and they respond with, like, Firefest. No, actually, the opposite of Firefest. That, and there's, like, this sort of media culture around tragedy at events, and that's not good for our business, and we need to change the scope of that. And if that means encouraging more regulation and more policy up top, I think I'd be in favor of that to save the consumer demand. People want to feel safe at large at events. And so even if someone's not requiring it, you can do it and you can communicate to your audience that it's being implemented.
That's what I mean, yeah. Because it's just human nature. Why would you do something if you don't have to?
Like,
especially if it's going to take time and cost, they're going to be like, I've got this.
For a long time in the events industry, we suffered the trend of sustainability. And everyone in the events industry would ask, why am I going to use a plant-based cup? Why would I invest in that when that is more expensive than a plastic cup? And as you can see, we've all adopted practices around recycling, sustainability, and we've done that because there was a genuine demand from our audiences for more social responsibility. And no one forced any of us to do any of that. And I can tell you, half of the festival websites out there all have a sustainability page. Why are we not communicating our health and safety measures in the same capacity? Why are we not taking the same, showing the same respect to those things?
Do you think it would be better if it was a requirement, if you had to be certified in order to have those positions?
Sure. Yeah, I agree. It's just not there. And I haven't seen it. These panels and these things have been formed time and time and again. And ultimately, it takes, it's going to take state and federal authority to throw that down. 95% of the times, all health and safety at my events are guided by the city or the county that I operate in.
Or if insurance companies get on board.
That's
a requirement.
It's a requirement. How much you insure yourself is a personal strategic decision and risk management.
Right.
Yeah.
But it could even, it even has the potential to be part of the brand. So, you know, when you're talking about festivals, you know, so Bonnaroo is an obvious example. You know, it's part of their brand that their influencers, their Bonnaroovians are, you know, there to welcome people, to ensure everybody's safe. You've got, you know, the socials and or the sustainability. You know, you see the people out, you know, collecting garbage, and it's part of like it's part of the joy of the experience of being at the festival. So if
people buy Volvos because they're safe cars. Would you ever buy a car that has a 3-star rating at this point? You know, like that could be part of your brand that you're communicating.
Absolutely.
That our institution creates safe environments, and let us tell you why and how.
And speaking of brands, sponsorship is obviously, you know, a huge part of event operations and including, you know, permanent infrastructures at stadiums and things like that. If the fan has the potential to drive, you know, large events in the industry towards embracing more and putting event safety out there in the forefront as opposed to, you know, in the background in a boring kind of status, what do you think about sponsors actually becoming part of that conversation as well, to be part of that branding that it's a safe experience? Because, you know, we've seen, you know, the hundreds of lawsuits, one of them was a major sponsor. So what do you guys think of that? It'll be any of you.
Well,
Look, no sponsor wants to be associated with tragedy. You know, and if you're not creating safe environments, it's going to impact your sponsorship business. But on the flip side of that, like I mentioned before, I think a lot of the tools we can deploy to create safe environments are also tools that we can utilize to create better sponsorships. And in that sense, does your event have an app? And that's a sponsorship asset. But that app also communicates health and safety and push notifications that you can program all weekend. You can also use it as an asset for your partners. Same with geolocation. You know, Christian and I were talking about this morning, you know, these emerging trends in, like, identifications and wallets, like Clear. Those are partnerships. That's part of the sponsorship repertoire, you know. And there's emerging technologies and companies that want to service that and bring value back to fans and attendees in response to that, similar to your facial recognition and tracking too. Yes, you can use that to get into the event safer as an identified customer, but you can also use it to purchase a $1 bottle of water that Apple Pay is subsidizing as part of your partnership business.
We do that a lot. We sell a lot of water.
Yeah, $1 bottle strategy is very popular.
Do you want to do that last question? Then, or do you want to go straight?
Does anybody have any questions? Okay, great.
Yeah, they do.
Yeah, come on up.
Hi there. My name is Shauna Butler. I'm a critical care nurse, and I've done venue medicine. And as a public health nurse, I cannot tell you how excited I am to hear you talk about public health and safety. So thank you. And one of the reasons why I come to these types of panels is because there's so much that we can learn in health and safety from people who are doing events. I've done specifically the venue management. And when we went down on lockdown, where were you as my partners when we were setting up these mass testing events and mass vaccination? So what I'm really wondering about is how deeply you're involved in thinking about within your work the vertical that actually has health. In our hospital settings, we are seeing so much violence. You know, I've never felt unsafe until like the last year, where there's just this level of hostility. So when you're talking about, and I don't want to set up magnetometers, I don't want to do pat downs. Hospitals are where you feel safe. They're sanctuaries. Mm-hmm. But we are increasingly seeing that. So how do you have that face recognition, that passive stuff, so we know where people are? And when I mentioned those, a vertical, Lyft and Uber and a lot of these technology companies that have been part of the equation for having access and accessibility to health, I'm wondering if you're working with anybody. Are you bringing nurses onto your teams? There's just such rich partnerships. When I'm listening here, my mind is buzzing, thinking, oh my God, how do we partner together so that we have recreation and music and health and festivals and connection and community? That is health. That is how we get happier.
Yeah,
so.
Absolutely.
Thank
so
you.
So I'll give you a quick hit. So LAFC, one of our largest partners, is Kaiser Permanente. Mm-hmm. We do a ton of stuff with them. They have an apparatus during our events within Bank of California Stadium. You know, we obviously have paramedics, we have medical staff as part of LAFC, so we always have a response plan for incidents. And then during the pandemic, we were hyper-focused on the community, because that's what LAFC does, and Gopi will tell you, we don't really do any press around it, because we're not trying to get headlines, but we
do
did it.
Do press.
Do that.
Well,
we should be part of your story.
Yeah, well, we do some of that, but we did a lot of vaccine outreach in our communities, which was a really interesting dynamic because we did them, you know, at shelters. We did it within the community, not at the stadium, but we were making sure that we were able to get doses into arms in Los Angeles for folks that are underserved. And so that was a key component of our business strategy. And it sounds weird, but at the end of the day, you know, it's all about risk and reputation. And so we always talk about how we do things for Los Angeles. It's part of our strategy. But that's not just playing football, right? It's actually giving back to the community. And so from a medical perspective, there's a lot of things that we do.
Yeah, and I would agree. And I think there's probably a lot more to medical than a first aid tent. You know, and I think that's sort of the bare requirement we all think about or is implored to us in these events. But have you built in adequate shade at your event to people seating for those that have accessibility issues? Do you have refrigeration for people's medical needs, pharmaceutical needs and things? Do you have breastfeeding stations? Like there is a many needs before you need to transport someone in an ambulance to a hospital. You don't want that.
We want to prevent that.
You want to prevent that. Yeah. And so, you know, driving down on the details of what caring for your attendees really means. And it's unfortunate sort of the security risks that we've seen over the last week. You see it in the air, too, with stewardess. And it's actually a fresh reminder. So thank you to be sure that you're reinforcing your staff so that they can meet the moment for the health needs at that point.
Okay, we're going to try to squeeze in one more question.
Yeah. Oh, just a comment. My experience was at Gillette Stadium for my vaccinations. It was a fun event. I am in a unique public safety space that is evolving, and it strikes me. First of all, I was very impressed with the approach all of you had, you know, keeping people safe. I am in the public safety cannabis space. And not only is that an evolving issue, we really don't know what we need yet. The federal government was helping to fund public safety, cannabis, how you detect and not, up until COVID. And then all the money had to go back into COVID. So it strikes me that groups like yours can be innovators in sorting out what is needed, both for your employees. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you read, Flixbus had a bus driver that did an edible in just a few days ago in Connecticut. Nobody was hurt. But it was a complicated thing. So, and again, just employees and attendees, because in some states they are entitled to consume.
Yeah.
we've got time.
Are you doing anything yet? And I want to know. I have my
clock. You know, to be frank on that, I do have cannabis sponsorships and partnerships at some of my festivals. You're right, the regulatory framework on how you handle consumption at an event is very loose and developing, even in California where I do my activations. To be frank, my perspective on it is I look and to regulate, you know, cannabis in the same way we do alcohol and make sure, you know, we're all familiar with 30, 40 years of concession operations on alcohol and making sure that we're not over-serving, that the staff is ID'd, we're regulating the pores and so on and so forth. When you talk about cannabis consumption, one, alcohol and cannabis don't mix pretty explicitly, even in the frameworks in California, and that we need to sort of treat it with the same lens that we treat other intoxicants at our events, and that also might mean reinforcing the medical and staffing needs when someone's overconsumed.
You had one more question?
Yeah, hi. I own an event production company out of the Bay Area, but we operate globally. And I think all of us in the event industry really felt in the pandemic. I mean, you've mentioned government regulation and, you know, different kind of red tape that we had to come back as an industry. But for lack of better terms, the ignorance of the government in how we run events and how safely we can. And you know, I saw a lot come together in our industry to try to combat that a bit, but how do we keep informing and making sure that our policymakers understand that we are the experts of what we're doing and we can operate safely? I mean, you know, events of only a couple hundred came back after large gatherings of any other sort came back.
And yeah, so we were completely ignored, even though we're the industry that puts on all the political conventions for them, right? Mm-hmm. When it came to, you know, financial relief, nothing. Like, it wasn't even on their radar at all. We don't have a lobbying arm. Now, that was the launch of the Live Events Coalition. I'm not sure if you're aware of that, but you know, and that coalition has done a lot of great things, and they have the ears of senators and congresspeople, but it's brand new. So it's going to take some time to get real traction. All of these other lobbying arms, from pharmaceutical to travel to, you know, the airline industry, I mean, everything under the sun, they've been doing it for decades. They've got long-standing relationships, and we're just starting out. But we're also a, you know, what, $900 billion industry. In a couple of years, we'll be over a trillion. We're not some small thing. And
they're
we
also not governing the official governing.
No, they're
well.
No, they're a nonprofit.
You know, that's important.
Yeah, they're a 501c3, so it's not really like an official entity. So that's the other challenge.
Mm-hmm. I was actually surprised to, you know, the comment earlier. Like, why was the event industry not tapped for vaccination relief? You know,
exactly. My thought too.
Testing. I mean, everybody was unemployed and getting unemployment. So why are we not working and organizing this? I mean, we could do that in a day.
Yeah, I mean, I saw vaccination clinics. They look like the back of house at any festival I go to, you know? And yeah, I agree. You know, I did see some folks took advantage of that opportunity to utilize their skills, but there should have been a much more institutional effort to that.
Yeah, we would have been able to do it probably a lot better and more efficient, and we would have been employed.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Yes.
You know, one more question. If you can go to the mic.
And just to build on that for a second, let's hold the big networks accountable too. You know, this industry has consolidated. Some of my bosses and clients, AEGs and Live Nations of the world, they should be doing that lobbying too. If you're going to take 70% of the market and leave the rest to the independents, you have a responsibility to guide those officials and those government frameworks, not only in your own benefit, for the entire industry.
Hi, I have so many thoughts, but I'm going to try to condense them here. First, I just want to comment toward event people helping out with COVID things. I think it kind of depended on where you were geographically. I live in Detroit, live and work in downtown Detroit. And we are a big city, but we are still on the come up. So we're a lot smaller than an LA or a Bay Area. So they did make us help with that. Like instead of, laying us all off, they kind of like made us step in. It also depends on who the big players are in the city. So I work for one of the biggest corporations in Detroit, and they were like, yeah, you guys are definitely going to be rerouted to help us out, which is awesome for us. It really stinks
to
hear. Yeah, it stinks to hear that everybody else didn't have that. So my question about Gobi, I think you mentioned, is everybody on radio? Does the communication, the real-time communication? And it kind of sparked a thought for me that we've been struggling with a lot. So it's kind of a selfish question, and I'm in a weird geographical space, but being in Detroit, we are right on the border of Canada. Like, I can see Canada from my desk.
Yeah, Windsor, right?
Yeah. Windsor, yeah. So all of our, super dope venues are right on the river. The Detroit River is the border between Detroit and Canada, so the U.S. and Canada. And I'll be running through, our big convention center with an event of, 10 to 15,000 people, and my phone is telling me I'm, welcome to Canada. You're now roaming. And I'm like, well, fuck. No, I'm not in Canada.
Yeah.
So I can't, call someone who's three floors down. I can't text. Our radios pick up Canadian waves. I can't even get on my email half the time. So then that takes me to Buddy. Are you ever going to look at this from a vendor aspect of these people need communication offline to each other when they are in these big groups?
Yeah, it actually does have that facility. We've got a crowd management platform that allows that.
Awesome. We are pumped for that already. I was texting my work group chat, you guys, there's this thing coming. It says it's not available on the app yet.
And also, that is a challenge, certainly. Think about your network infrastructure, and Christian's quite the master at this, but there's cellular networks, which is probably causing that problem that you're referring to. One, you could interface with them a bit. It's really AT&T or Verizon at this point. Two, you could create local networks with wireless, and Kim and I have worked on this at Festivals Beyond, and you can run your essential communications, and you can even restrict the applications and communications on that network. And then for radios in particular, make sure you're setting up repeater systems that are well-tuned. Something that no one likes to talk about, RF coordination, radio frequency coordination, it's a thing. There's lots of bandwidth. There's lots of technologies moving on these things. There are experts you can hire to help you with radio frequency communication and managing that.
Cool.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for all the questions. We're going to be available after, but we want to, respect the time and the schedule. So thank you, everybody, for coming.
Thank you.